Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Yesterday afternoon, Governor Peter Shumlin outlined his budget priorities to lawmakers. Shumlin says his budget plan meets the needs of the state and does not rely on money that's available only on a one-time basis.
Today, I'm proud to present to you a budget that closes a $68 million budget gap, does not rely on one-time money for ongoing state expenses for the first time since the Great Recession, increases general fund spending by a modest 3.1%, which is matched by an identical projected increase in our revenues.
The governor's plan also includes $30 million in new revenue, and it contains some controversial proposals. Today on Vermont Edition, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. We're going to take a look at his budget proposal for next year, and we'll also discuss some of the other key issues being considered at the State House. Governor, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Some of your initial thoughts about the governor's budget priorities. And what do you think are some of the most important issues being considered at the State House this year? We'd love to know. 1-800-639-2211. So let's start off with your plan to raise $30 million in new revenue. It really has two parts. And let's look at the first part, which expands an existing assessment on healthcare providers, namely hospitals and doctors who are employed by hospitals, to now include independent doctors and all dentists. Now, these assessments are probably going to get passed along to consumers in the form of higher healthcare premiums. So critics of this plan say, you know, what you're basically doing is asking folks with private insurance to bail out the Medicaid program. So why are you?
So let's talk about what problem we're trying to solve here, because I think before we talk about the revenue, we better figure out what the problem is. Vermont has done an extraordinary job of embracing the Affordable Care Act. We literally now have universal coverage for health insurance. I mean, that's been a goal that's evaded governors for years. We've done it. I'm incredibly proud of it. We should be proud of it. 3.6% of Vermonters in the last survey were uninsured. That's virtually universal coverage. What that means practically is that we have literally moved 19,000 Vermonters who are making horrid choices in their lives, fearing that they'd get sick, face bankruptcy. Now they know they have insurance. That means that we now have over 200,000 Vermonters on some form of Medicaid. Now, let's not forget, there's only 625,000 of us. So we're talking about nearly a third of our state on some form of Medicaid. Our problem is that with all the enthusiasm to sign folks up for a great health care plan, embrace and draw down the federal dollars that come with Obamacare, we have refused to pay for it. So that's why this governor, who really has an aversion to taxes, stood before the legislature last year and said, listen, we've got to do this. It's not good government to sign Vermonters up for health care, cover them, and not pay for it. And the result is two things. One, the folks on Medicaid can't have security that their Medicaid will survive because you got to pay for it. And the second is, obviously, the providers who serve Medicaid clients can't stay in business. And we saw four docs recently go out in Franklin County because they had a big Medicaid population. They couldn't stay in business. So I went out last year with a proposal that was widely rejected, saying let's use a modest payroll tax to help meet this obligation. Remember, we're leaving $100 million of federal funds on the table in Washington, D.C. that we would bring to Vermont to help pay our Medicaid providers with adequate rates if we had the courage to raise the money to match it. So the legislature said no to that. My proposal this year is docs and dentists. We now require any doctor or hospital in Vermont to pay a much higher provider tax to do business in Vermont. All I'm saying now is let's offer a tax of half that amount to the independent docs and dentists already being paid by the folks who are in the networks in order to raise the Medicaid reimbursement for those docs and dentists that are serving the Medicaid folks.
But what you're doing, in effect, is asking people with private health insurance to help subsidize the Medicaid program.
Well, I would argue that people with private health insurance are subsidizing the Medicaid program right now, because what happens practically is two things. When they only get paid 60 cents on a dollar for a dollar's work, two things happen. One, they struggle to stay in business. Or two, that cost gets shifted to the private insurance payers. That's what's happening now. So, you know, listen, this isn't I've now offered two proposals to solve this problem. I can't come up with a third. I think that the one I offered last year, frankly, is more elegant than this one. But we've got to solve this problem. We cannot go home once again with a budget deficit. Let's remember that the vast majority, if we had passed my proposal last year, you virtually wouldn't have had a budget gap this year. You wouldn't have. So you can't continue as Vermonters to say, we want folks to have health care. We're going to sign them up. We're refusing to pay for it because you rob every other agency of state government to help pay for the Medicaid gap. It's got to be dealt with, Bob. It's just got to be. And, you know, I know that legislators can bury their head in the sand if they choose and not make responsible choices. But as a governor, I've got to balance a budget.
So we got this email from Alex who wrote us, I'm a board-certified independent physician practicing in Colchester and Burlington. I've been in practice here for 25 years. We are already struggling to make ends meet in our practices, reimbursements going down, expenses going up. The last thing we need is another tax, unless the grand scheme is to make us all go belly up.
And I would say to that, Doc, I think under the current system, you are going belly up. We just saw it happen with four more providers up in Franklin County. And this is my attempt to try and raise reimbursements for the providers that are struggling because they're serving a bigger and bigger Medicaid population. So we're in this problem to solve it together. This is a solution. I offered another solution that we'd love to have help with, but one of my two solutions, I believe, should become law.
Would it be fair to say that based on your experience of last year, that your proposal this year is a short-term solution, and you're basically leaving it to the next governor to come up with a more comprehensive and sustainable approach?
Well, let me be clear. I've balanced the budget. In other words, if the legislature adopts this proposal, our budget is balanced, and we're paying our bills, and we will draw down, you know, over $20 million of federal funds that we're leaving, of the 100 that we're leaving on table in Washington. So it's a step in the right direction, and raise another 17 here in Vermont to help reimburse providers at a higher rate as well as pay our bills. So bottom line is this is not the comprehensive plan that I offered last year, but if they pass this plan, it will work in balancing our budget and starting to meet our Medicaid obligation.
And you've said in the last 6 months or last year, what's really needed is a dedicated tax source for Medicaid, but that's going to be a later governor and another legislature to consider that approach.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to downplay too much what we've offered here. If the legislature were to adopt the proposal I made yesterday, we're making a step forward in raising the money for the Medicaid promises that we've made. And my only point is this. We can't go home once again having not dealt with this problem. We just can't do it. It's not responsible government. It's not good government. It's not the way we do things in Vermont. You know, Republican and Democratic governors have prided themselves over the years in being fiscally responsible, balancing our budgets, paying our bills. We have made the promise of health care now to over 200,000 Vermonters. We cannot. No, I don't think there's a Vermonter out there who thinks it's responsible to make the promise and not pay for it.
So in healthcare, there are some program cuts in your budget. One is tightening Medicaid eligibility requirements for pregnant women. This proposal is designed to save roughly $5 million. The administration says these women can still get healthcare coverage. They'll just need to buy subsidized policies on the state's healthcare exchange. They'll still face some sizable out-of-pocket costs. Burlington Representative Chris Pearson is very critical of your plan.
The irony of him trumpeting more coverage and leading the nation on payment reform and health care reform and then quietly proposing a budget that cuts back coverage for lower-income pregnant women is pretty astonishing.
So some people might wonder, why are you asking low-income pregnant women to shoulder some of the responsibility for balancing the Medicaid budget?
Well, that's certainly not our intent. Let me be clear what we're doing. And I want to correct Representative Pearson's assessment of what we're trying to do and be very clear about what we are doing. Listen, right now we have a broken system for pregnant women on Medicaid. This is how it works. You qualify for Medicaid at a higher income level if you're pregnant. So if you become, and that's a smart thing. If you become pregnant, you get health insurance. The day that you have the baby, you lose your coverage. So we're trying to fix that. That all was part of the system before we had the Affordable Care Act and the exchange. Right now, if you go on to Medicaid as a pregnant mom, you're pregnant for 9 months, you have the baby, you lose your insurance, unless you're in the open enrollment period, which is only 2 months, you can't get on the exchange to get your health insurance. So what we're trying to do, and New York has just done this, is change the law to reflect this new great addition, Affordable Care Act, to allow pregnant women not to lose their coverage the minute they have the baby. Because I don't think there's a Vermonter who think that's very smart. So we're really using the tool of the Affordable Care Act to give access to women who currently lose their insurance coverage the day they have the baby. So that's step one. And I think everyone would agree that that's a smart thing to do.
Well, let's look at this, though. I mean, really what you're saying right now, for people who have 138% of poverty, which is about $16,000 a year, they qualify for Medicaid. And under the expanded program for pregnant women, it would go up to $25,000. So your solution is to say
only for the 9 months that
that's
pregnant.
Right. Your solution is to say for the 9 month period, people in the higher income categories won't get any coverage. And you're going to have to fall back to the $16,000 limit. So in a way—
No, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is that the women who are on the $16,000, as soon as they become eligible for the higher credit, the higher coverage, instead of losing that the day they have their baby, they should go to the exchange where on the bronze plan, they can be on continuously without paying an additional penny.
But under that bronze plan, they're going to be subject to out-of-pocket costs.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to talk about that. In other words, we want to find a way. My goal is to find a way for pregnant women not to lose their coverage the day they have their baby. And I'm perfectly willing. Governors make lots of recommendations and budgets to work with the legislature to make sure that pregnant women don't get financially penalized for this in any way, shape, or form. But my goal is to change the rules of the exchange so that instead of having to wait for open enrollment to get coverage after their baby's born, they have continuous coverage. And that's my goal.
Today on the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We've been talking about a bunch of the budget issues. There could be other issues that you're concerned about. Give us a call. 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to George in St. Johnsbury. Hey, George, welcome to the program.
Hello, Governor. I think you are to be commended as one of the few governors in the country that takes climate change seriously. And in light of that, I'm wondering if you can point to any plausible, concrete evidence that Hillary Clinton will likewise do something about climate change if she should become president of the United States. I ask this, of course, because you've endorsed her.
Well, thanks for the call, George. You know, I think the beauty of the Democratic nominees for president or candidates for president is that the shades of difference between them on issues of climate change are so thin that any three of them would fight to get us off of coal and oil and move to renewables. As you know, both Bernie and Hillary and Martin O'Malley believe we shouldn't build the XL pipeline. They also believe we should build out renewables like mad, do energy efficiency right, and do some of the things that Vermont is doing. You know, I mean, as you mentioned, we're really leading the country in terms of moving off of coal and oil to renewable energy, making sure that our utilities now are in the energy efficiency business, where they really literally come into your homes and with one program change out your old doors and windows, blow your house with cellulose, put solar on the roof or in the yard in a CSA, have storage, get your old oil burner out of there and replace it with a heat pump. I mean, this is radical stuff in other parts of the country. We're just doing it in Vermont. So, you know, my belief is that any of the candidates running for president get that time's running out, the clock is ticking. Now, we could be doing more in Vermont, George, and that's why I have called for the legislature to divest Vermont of our coal assets. Why is Vermont owning coal stocks at this time? And I'd love to have your help in calling your legislators over there in the St. Johnsbury area to say, listen, Vermont shouldn't be owning coal. That's the, you know, the folks that are burning coal, we're the tailpipe to their emissions. It makes our kids sick. It puts acid rain in our waters and our lakes. It destroys our forests. We are literally the tailpipe to the coal-burning states, and I just think it makes good sense for Vermont to take that additional step. So my point is, I think all three candidates running for president will be good on climate. God knows they'll be better than any of those Republicans who all claim that climate change doesn't seem to exist.
As George mentioned, you are supporting Hillary Clinton. You're a supporter of single payer. You've been a strong supporter of single payer throughout the years. Hillary Clinton seems very dismissive of Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All plan. She says it raises taxes on the middle class and that it blows up Obamacare. How do you feel when she says things like that?
Well, I don't think that let's put it this way. I don't tend to react to what is said by candidates close to primaries from either side, and there's plenty of strong statements going out from both sides that always happen when primaries get close, and primaries always get close in the Democratic primary process. But this is what I'll say about the healthcare situation in America and why I believe Hillary Clinton will take Obamacare and make it even better. You've got a Congress right now that just in the real world has voted to repeal Obamacare almost 60 times. I mean, these folks in Congress aren't going to do anything on health care if they're not forced to. We know that the way they've redrawn the lines in America, and ask Congressman Welch this if you don't believe me, they literally, these Republicans, have the lines drawn for the Congress people, not to serve the people. So until we redraw those lines, I believe we're stuck with a Tea Party Congress. Having said that, I believe that Hillary is on the right track in believing that if we can expand the subsidies so that people in Obamacare make it better, so that we get more Americans in, instead of having 19 million Americans signed up, let's get the rest signed up. Let's reduce the copays, which is what she wants to do, and increase the subsidies for premiums and move to health care for all, which is what Obamacare can be used as the platform for. We're going to have a much better chance of actually getting that through a Tea Party Congress, some improvements to Obamacare. Anyone thinks that this Congress is adopting a single-payer health care system for all, they know something about that Tea Party that I haven't heard yet. So, you know, my point is we need a president who can bring people together to get things that Democrats want done. And I think that Hillary is an extraordinary candidate in that respect.
So when you've been on before, some listeners have called in and wondered, why are you supporting Hillary Clinton instead of Bernie Sanders? What's the short answer?
First of all, let me just say I have immense respect for Bernie Sanders. We're friends. I've supported him in every campaign that he's run. He's supported me in every campaign that I've run. And I think he's an extraordinary U.S. senator, and I'm proud that he's running for president. You'll never hear me say a negative thing about Bernie Sanders, nor should I. What I will say is that it's my belief that we have never in the Democrat Party had a candidate who combines incredible smarts with unbelievable experience and the ability to take really complex policy issues, put them into smart plans, and then bring people together to make them happen. And one reason we're all so frustrated, so sick and tired of Washington, D.C., is that nothing happens down there. So we need a president who is uniquely qualified to bring folks together from all parties and actually get some things done. And I don't think we've ever had a candidate run for president in the Democratic Party, certainly in my lifetime, who has more abilities to be a pragmatic progressive who will get things done than Hillary. And that's just the times we're in. Now, Lynn, I want to be clear. I supported Barack Obama 8 years ago because we were dealing with a different dynamic. There was no Tea Party in Congress. And we could have achieved lots of dreams had we not had that Tea Party there. We are dealing with a Tea Party. The next president of the United States is dealing with a Tea Party Congress. We've got to ask ourselves, who's going to be the most effective progressive to deal with that Congress? And I say it's Hillary.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. If you've got a question or a comment for the governor, let's talk to Donna in Burlington. Hi, Donna. What's on your mind today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about the governor's proposal to reduce eligibility for low-income pregnant women, which I think is a very very short-sighted proposal. Don't believe that your statement, Governor Shumlin, is accurate, that pregnant women on Dr. Dinosaur lose coverage the minute the baby's born, and then they cannot enroll in coverage through through Vermont Health Connect until open enrollment. I'm pretty confident that pregnant women, once they have their baby, are allowed to stay on Dr. Dinosaur for some period of time. But they also have qualify for a special enrollment to enroll in coverage through Vermont Health Connect.
You're correct about that. But what I'm trying to fix is the fact that they can't enroll in the exchange. In other words, it's not considered a special category pregnancy until they wait for open enrollment to come around. So that's the problem I'm trying to fix. I agree with you that I don't want to use this as a way to cost pregnant women more money. And I've said to my team this morning, listen, there's plenty of ways to save money in the budget. Go back to the legislature and give them alternatives of other ways to make savings. This shouldn't be a savings effort. This should be a way to allow pregnant women to get coverage in the exchange any time of year after they've had their baby if they choose to.
So why don't you solve
that? And the reason for that, just to be clear, Donna, is that right now, before we had the exchange, this wasn't true. If you go, for example, the bronze plan, you literally can go on there with no insurance cost. And as you know, the minute you have the baby, you drop down back to your old income level.
So if that's the problem, why don't you fix the problem? If the problem is having these women eligible to get into the exchange, why don't you just fix that
problem? That's exactly what I just said.
Without dealing with the eligibility standards.
That's exactly what I think we should do.
So you've kind of changed on this in the last 24 hours?
That's correct.
Okay. Let's talk to Dorothy, who is calling from Johnson. Hi, Dorothy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm going to change the subject a little bit. We wrote to the governor's office 3 months ago. We were victims of the 2011 flooding. My husband and I are both disabled, and we're not yet in safe housing. And we finally have developed a plan that is economically feasible for us as elders on a fixed budget. And then we learned that the flood support program that had been available has been stopped. And we were counting on that to help us get into something that would keep us secure for what we hoped would be the rest of our lives. So I was looking to the governor's office to give us some direction. We haven't heard back since writing to the office, and I'm not really sure what to do.
Give me your phone number, and we'll have someone call you later today.
And rather than doing that on the air, Dorothy, why don't you let us know at VPR what your phone number is, and we'll make sure that the governor gets it. Let me ask you about Act 46. It seems to be really tying the legislature up in knots in this first couple of weeks of the session. The Senate this week, after about 25 minutes of debate, decided to repeal the spending caps of Act 46. That's the state's new school district consolidation law. The House looks like it wants to expand those caps, give school boards a little more leeway. We're running out of time here. You support repeal. Why is that the best option?
Because I think that the caps have become the enemy of the good. And I just want to point out that Act 46 has acted better, has done more good, moved faster, and is working better than I ever would have anticipated. And let's just take an example. Yesterday, the State Board approved four more consolidation plans. We literally have, I mean, get this. I never would have predicted this when I signed the bill. And let's remember what the problem is. We've got 20,000 fewer students than we had in our schools. That number is going to continue to drop. We've had governors from both parties for years trying to deal with this administrative structure that is bigger than our student count. We don't have an efficient system, and most importantly, it's hurting kids because schools keep making worse and worse choices as they try to manage budgets. I'll give you an example. I picked up the paper yesterday, and there's a story of my hometown right now, the East Montpelier School Board, literally talking about getting rid of the Spanish teacher or two other teachers to meet their goals. So, you know, that's not good for kids because their student count dropped significantly just in the last year. So they're making hard choices. Look at this. I mean, just get this. We now have half of the kids in Vermont go to a school where their school boards and communities are now having conversations with other communities about how they build a better quality, more efficient system. I mean, that's unbelievable. So my point is, these two-year caps are the enemy of the good. They weren't well thought out. They are obviously creating problems. We need to fix them before school boards send their school board their budgets to the printer, which is about a week from now. I need a bill on my desk. And I just think it's pretty simple. The Senate's passed a bill to repeal it. Let's repeal it.
So how would you feel if you were a local school board member and about half the communities in Vermont are coming in under the caps, and the caps with penalties are affecting the other half of the school budgets? Let's say you're a school board member that comes in under the cap, and you made some really tough decisions to make that happen. And then you find out that the legislature repealed the caps, but you're stuck with the budget that you have. And in a way, lawmakers are rewarding those school budgets that didn't adhere to the caps. How would you feel about that?
I think it just confirms that the caps are the enemy of the good. And we forget that what Act 46 is doing is what Vermonters have sought for years and years. Finally, a mechanism for communities to have really good conversations about how we build the best education system for our kids possible at a more affordable price. And the caps just weren't well conceived. They were done at the last minute. Folks obviously didn't really have it thought out. And I think when we make mistakes, we should admit them and fix them.
So you wouldn't be ticked off as a school board member that actually adhered to the caps, made the tough decisions, maybe cut some programs, cut some teachers, and now you find out, hey, you didn't have to do that after all.
If I weren't used to being in the business of people being ticked off, I wouldn't have run for governor. Everything a governor does ticks somebody off. But the point is, we get elected to do what's right for Vermont. What is right for Vermont is Act 46. It's a great bill. And it's working better, as I said, than I anticipated. It's going to serve. I think this will be looked back on as one of the most important milestones in improving quality of education and getting property taxes more in line with what Vermonters can pay of anything that we've done in recent memory. And no matter how you look at these caps, whether you're someone that adhered or someone that is struggling to adhere, they seem to be more trouble than they are good.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Tom, who's calling from Swanton. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Concerning the $30 million tax increase, from 2011 to now, the spending in Montpelier has increased over 22%. Yet, in that same time, our population has only grown 0.3%. So in this period, we are spending over $500 million on the same amount of people. Why can we not find the $30 million that the governor needs through that over $500 million from the same amount of people? I'd like to know how this math works. Thank you.
So, Tom, as you know, you can do lots of things with statistics and lots of things with math. It's important for Vermonters to know when you cite those numbers that two significant things happened. One, when Governor Douglas was governor, every state got sent millions and hundreds of millions of dollars of federal ERA money that was meant to bail out a sinking economy. And that obviously jacked our spending numbers because we suddenly, on a one-time basis over several years, got all kinds of federal money. The second is Tropical Storm Irene hit, and we spent almost $1 billion of federal and state money trying to work our way out of that one. So when you look at those statistics, you know, if you take out the ERA money and you take out the Irene money, you'll find a much more reasonable spending curve. Now, then the question is, well, what is driving spending in Vermont? And the answer is Medicaid expansion. So when you sign folks up for Medicaid and move Vermont to universal health coverage and literally add 19,000 Vermonters to insurance, that's going to jack your budget. That's a policy choice that we've made. And the challenge we have right now as a state is that we keep signing folks up and refusing to pay for it. I've proposed a way to pay for it. You've got to do one or two things. Either change your policy and stop expanding Medicaid. Tell folks, sorry, we can't pay for it, so we were just kidding. You can't have your health care coverage anymore. Or you got to figure out a way to pay for it. There is no third option.
Let's turn to Thomas, who is calling from Derby. Hi, Thomas. What's on your mind today?
Well, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to say that we've seen this idea of taxing health care providers to bring down more federal dollars to fund Medicaid when some years ago That was used as a tax on hospitals with the promise that the money would come back to the hospitals. And lo and behold, it did for a couple of years, and then less and less, and now it's only a fraction of what they're being taxed. I think it's playing a game of trying to get federal dollars without really facing the question. And seriously, we are having trouble in the Northeast Kingdom recruiting doctors and dentists anyway. It seems as though we'll have many people who have Medicaid eligibility but no doctors to serve them. There has to be another way. There are not just two options for raising this. There must be another. I'd like to know what the governor says to that.
We're all ears for options, but I got to tell you, you got to remember that the doctors who are in our hospital networks, and as you know, now the majority of docs in Vermont are in hospital networks, they're paying the tax. All we're asking is for the other docs to pay half of that amount. So, you know, there's some fairness in this too. Now, listen, if you can find a third way, I'm all ears. What isn't okay is to continue to expand Medicaid and not pay for it. And this has got to be dealt with by a governor. This is what we got to do, is balance our books. I mean, we've made a policy choice as a state. Now, if folks want to change the policy choice, I disagree with it, but that's fiscally responsible. I mean, that would be one way to solve our budget problems. Or you've got to say, we believe in this policy, which I do. We think it's the right thing to do. And we got to have the courage to pay for it. And whenever you have to have the courage to pay for something, it's not fun. It always means that somebody has to change their behavior. But, you know, I do think that by and large, our hospital and doc tax has worked in Vermont. And that's why every other state in America has joined us in doing it. We do charge, as you know, they're paying about close to 6%, which is the ceiling for hospitals and docs now. And we draw down hundreds of millions of dollars of federal funds, and it supports our healthcare system. And you don't hear the hospitals screaming and hollering about that.
You know, some people might look at the situation, and I'm sure a lot of healthcare providers would, that on one hand, you're expanding Medicaid, and Medicaid has a very low reimbursement rate, something you tried to address last year unsuccessfully.
But which this proposal does address, just want to make that clear.
To a small degree.
Yep.
Right?
Well,
so, I mean, aren't you making a bad situation even worse by adding more and more people to Medicaid?
But let me – well, you could argue that if you don't believe in universal access, you are certainly – listen, when you add people to Medicaid, there's no question that you're adding an additional burden to the state budget and the federal budget. We have to ask this question. I mean, someone just asked about how we get to universal access for healthcare. If we believe that it's the right public policy for people not to have to make horrid, horrid choices when they don't have health insurance for themselves and their families, then we've got to come to the plate and be willing to deal with it. And that's what we've done as a state. I'm proud of that. I am incredibly proud to be the governor who has finally brought about virtually universal access to health care in the state. What I'm less proud of is the fact that every time I come up with a plan to actually pay for it, folks bury their heads in the sand, come with all the reasons of why the sky will fall in if we pay for it. Listen, you cannot purchase something and not pay for it. And so the result is that we're under-reimbursing our docs and providers. They can't stay in business. That's a disaster for us. And it also means we can't balance our state budget. So listen, no matter how you skin this one, there's only two ways to solve it. I'm not willing to be the governor who says, we were just kidding, we're taking your health care coverage away from you. So we got to come up with a way for plan. I've come up with two plans. I'm not going to come up with a third. But if someone can think of a third, I'm all ears. We got to deal with this one head on. This is not good government to pretend that we can just, you know, do what they do in Washington. Talk, complain, complain, not solve the problem.
Today in the program, our guest is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Our guest today is Governor Peter Shumlin. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. If you've got a question or a comment for the governor. Governor, there's a lot of debate at the State House if towns should have more say about whether or not a renewable energy project, an array of solar panels or a cluster of wind turbines can be built in their community. You know, when Green Mountain Power looked at Lowell as a site for its wind turbines, it said it would not build this project unless the voters of Lowell approved it in a townwide vote. And ultimately, the voters did. So why shouldn't this be the process for all future large-scale renewable energy projects?
Well, listen, I mean, all of us want towns to support energy projects, and obviously we don't want to put energy projects in communities where they don't want them. I mean, we all share that as a goal, but this is what's changing. We now are probably one of the most progressive states in building out renewables in America. And I'm proud of that. We have 10 times the number of solar panels we had when I became governor. We finally have wind, which is good in my view. We're doing energy efficiency right. And we're really making real progress in moving the state to the goal that we need to, that everyone needs to join us in to save this planet, of my goal of 90% renewable by 2050. We're going to have to work hard to do that. That means that you're going to see your energy generation. It's not going to be out there somewhere as it was years ago, brought in by poles and wires. And it's not all that different than the challenge that Governor Aiken faced, the last governor from Putney, when he was trying to get utility lines to the every last mile of Vermont. You know, these poles went up in all these communities. They cut down the elm trees and the maple trees and the downtowns, and they put poles and wires up. Now you drive by those, you don't even see them. So my point is, you're going to see your electric generation. So what I say is, let's do this smart. We're learning as we go. And we obviously want towns to have a say in the process. That's why we passed a bill I signed into law last year that makes sure that every community has a say at the public service board process. That's an improvement. But what we can't do is say, and never have been able to with any public good, listen, if a community doesn't want that interstate driven through their community, they vote and the interstate's got to go somewhere else because you can't always reroute it. You can't have a community be able to say, listen, those power lines can't go through our community, transmission lines, because we don't want them, because then you can't get power to folks. The public good requires that in these energy choices, same with highways, same with utilities, you've got to make sure that the overall public good of the state also is considered. And there are times, I can tell you, Windham County didn't really want a nuclear power plant when it was built. But there are times where you have to make choices that are in the public good. And I think we're trying to find that balance in Vermont.
So what do you think about the idea of basically using the criteria of Act 250 for the siting of these renewable energy projects and the 10 criteria of Act 250 and giving a town some standing and having the town plan, the zoning plan, be applicable in those decisions?
I don't think putting solar panels on your roof or in your yard is the same as putting a big box store. And I think that if we go through an Act 250 process for every renewable project in Vermont, we won't build renewables, and that's a huge mistake for us.
But what about the bigger ones? I mean, we've got some plans that are 2 megawatt, 5 megawatt. We got some that you oppose that are 20 megawatt facilities. I mean, how about those? Should those go under Act 250?
Well, as you know, that I personally believe that the Public Service Board process works, that we can keep making some tweaks to it, but I don't think it necessitates – I don't think that Act 250 is required for most renewable energy projects in Vermont. I just think it would be a mistake. And, you know, I got to mention this. You know, we sometimes forget that I think Vermonters support renewable energy. Now, there's division, obviously, on exactly where and what and why. But the great thing about Vermont is we understand that we cannot continue to burn oil and coal as the future to the planet. And we've got a responsibility to move on this. We've got to be very careful not to put obstacles in the way. And I want to mention, it's not just about good energy. This is growing jobs. It might surprise Vermonters that of the over 17,000 jobs that we've added in this state since I've become governor, now almost 5%. Of every job in the state is related to the green, clean, renewable energy world. And that's a big deal. And guess what? When you see those folks, that workforce, those are young people. You know, they're not the vast majority of the folks working for the solar installation companies and all the companies doing energy efficiency. You go and take a look at them. They're not old, gray, wrinkled like me. These are young people coming to Vermont or staying in Vermont because they've got a great paying job and they're doing something that they think matters for the planet.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Barbara, who is calling from Burlington. Hi, Barbara. What's on your mind today?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I wanted to correct something. The governor said, inferred that in a listing of things that were actually good to have been done was to be against and of the pipeline. However, he has stated that he is for it prior to saying this.
No, I'm sorry. We're confusing our pipelines. I have been against the XL pipeline that President Obama recently put an end to, that huge pipeline that was going to bring tar sands oil down from Western Canada down to the coasts and send it out for, I think, mostly export, but certainly refining. And that's the pipeline I was referring to. And I've been consistently against it from the day I heard about it.
Barbara, does that clarify things for you?
Not really, because the other pipeline really should not have been supported because it does carry a non-renewable. And if we're talking about that, we should be very specific. And so I consider this a correction because it's all in the same way.
Governor, we've heard this from a lot of people who oppose the pipeline project. They look at your views on climate change and they say, why is he supporting this pipeline project? They understand the solar panels, they understand the wind turbines, but this source of energy, they say, is not good for the climate. What do you say?
So I just got to say, first of all, comparing the XL pipeline to this little teeny spur of a natural gas pipeline that we're expanding in western along the western coast of Vermont to about 3,500 customers seems to me like comparing Mars to the Earth. Having said that, listen, this is why I support it, and I know we don't all agree on this. I believe that Chittenden County and Franklin County, as we know, now have natural gas, and it allows folks to take out their current oil-burning systems and move to natural gas, which is a cleaner fossil fuel than oil. I believe that if we run it down the western side of the state, it will be a cheaper, cleaner fuel than the one that most folks there are using right now. So we can disagree on some of the particulars. It's a very small pipeline in comparison to, you know, pipelines across America. And I think it's good for the economy and good for climate. Now, I know Barbara and others disagree with me. That's the beauty of Vermont. We have these conversations. I'm glad that the Public Service Board has seen it my way and approved this particular expansion. You know, I understand the argument that we shouldn't be using frack gas at all. But, you know, I just want to point out half of our energy in Vermont now, of our electricity, roughly, comes from natural gas, fracked gas facilities, generators. That doesn't mean we all cut down our electric lines. When you go fill up your car with gasoline at the pump, one of the byproducts of fracking is that particular fuel. It doesn't mean we all throw away the keys to our car. So it's really a question of how do we meet our goals of moving to renewables? I think in this case, you're going to move Vermonters from really dirty oil to a cheaper, cleaner fuel.
We're almost out of time, but folks might want to know there is a proposal at the State House to a constitutional amendment to expand the governor's term in office from 2 years to 4 years. Vermont, just one of two states across the country with a 2-year term. What are your thoughts about that?
I support a 2-year term. I always have, and I expect I always will. I never know what might happen in the future, but I'll tell you why. I personally have found as governor that it's particularly helpful when you're trying to do big, bold things, and we've done a lot in this in my tenure in the last 6 years, 5.5 years, to be able to every 2 years get a check-in from Vermonters and say, listen, I'm pushing ahead with what I think is right. I came here to get some really tough things done. I know they're controversial. I know you won't agree with maybe any of them or maybe most of them or maybe some of them, but I just assume know whether you want to fire me or not. And I think that every 2 years having that system is good for Vermont's democracy. I also really think that 6 years is the best amount of time to serve as a governor, because after 6 years, folks tend to be pretty tired of their governor. It's a controversial job. You do a lot. You get a lot of people mad. And you can't have a 6-year term without a 2-year term in any way that I can figure out.
No regrets about not seeking another term in office?
I love this job. Been an extraordinary ride. I've always thought that 6 years was the right amount of time to make a difference for my state, and I'm looking forward at the end of working tirelessly to get things done to going back and being with my wife and family back in Putney, running a family business and having a normal life.
Many issues we'll be following in the weeks and months ahead. Governor Peter Shumlin, many thanks for being on the program today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
That is Vermont Edition for today. You may or may not have picked out who you're voting for in the coming year's elections, but how do you make those decisions? On Monday, we're diving into the values, concerns, and ideologies that lead Vermonters to decide how to cast their votes. Email us with your thoughts at vermontedition@vpr.net and listen Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari and Sam Gale Rosen, with production assistance from Anna St. Marie. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.